The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Live streaming provided by Alpha Geek Radio and Alpha Geek Video. Visit tunein.alphageekradio.com to learn more.
Finally, Friday's being brought to you this week by our Major Spoilers VIPs. We'd sure appreciate your support for as little as $2 a month. And show your support for everything that MajorSpoilers.com does by signing up over at members.majorspoilers.com. Hello, everyone. It is finally Friday, and I want to start off with an apology about last week. Because last week, we were literally 30 seconds away from going. And Ashley was here, and everything was going fine. And then literally 30 seconds before we started, something froze up on this system, and I couldn't figure out what it was because the Skype audio just kept looping through my ears. I couldn't hear anything except for like the last 5 seconds of what Ashley had said, where she was talking about she was loving something. So all I could hear was, I love. And it was just like insane. And so I was like, okay, well, maybe if I just restart the entire system, we can clear it up. Restarted the system. And the system, for whatever reason, became extremely sluggish. Like, click. 30 seconds later, something would happen. And I was like, oh, no, this is not good. And then I shut it down again, fired everything back up. Came back up and it was starting to work. Everything was working fine as far as speed and processors not being used up. But open up Skype and I love. And it's like, oh, my God. So by that time, it was already a quarter till. And so I decided to ditch the show for last week. So I apologize for that. That was not a planned outage. And I thought Ashley was going to be here this week, but I forgot. She's at WonderCon this weekend, going on right now at Los Angeles, Anaheim. If you're in the area, go check it out. There's going to be a lot of stuff going on this weekend, and you'll want to check it out because tomorrow, Saturday, the 26th, I believe at 11:30 a.m. Pacific, DC will unveil everything about Rebirth. So if you want to know what's going on, they're going to announce creators. They're going to announce, we already know the titles, but they'll announce the creators and hopefully some of the solicitation stuff that goes with those titles. I would imagine we'll have those full solicitations by Monday morning, and DC will definitely have to get them out fast because preview orders will be due fairly soon. So that will all be coming out. But Ashley is going to WonderCon to do that and one other thing, which we can't talk about, but also will be announced tomorrow at 11:30. So you can go over to the website, majorspoilers.com. That's where all of that will be. And you can see what is going on. All right. Let me introduce my guest this week. Hey, it's Dr. Brad Will.
Oh, hey.
What's going on with you?
Well, I'm not at WonderCon, that's for sure.
You are not at WonderCon, that is for sure. Let me turn you up just a little
bit. Okay. You're here. I'll lean in close.
There you go. Talk into that microphone and we can hear you nice.
Do one
and
of those whisper videos for YouTube.
There you go. What's a whisper video on YouTube?
You don't know?
No, what is it?
Oh, it's a whole genre that you'll have to, yeah.
Where people just like, hi, Brad.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah, they just get in. They say, hello. How are you? Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the point?
It's supposed to be very relaxing.
Oh, are these the things that people go to sleep on?
Yeah, or yeah, maybe like, I think they'll give you a haircut on YouTube.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Okay, well, anyway. So you're here this week. So glad to have you here this week. So the other thing that if you're going to call in this week, that's great. We want to hear from you. Definitely. We want to hear from you. The one thing that we probably shouldn't talk about though, is Batman v Superman because not everyone has seen it. And I definitely do not want to get into any spoilery discussions because very easily last night, Gail Simone, who was trying to be non-spoilery, did let a few spoilery things slip. And I don't want to accidentally slip out some spoilery stuff. But I, you know, just to give you a baseline, I enjoyed the movie. I think most of the critics are wrong, but at the same time, I think the greatest flaw of the movie is its reliance on comic book knowledge. Hmm. That's what I will say about it. So, Brad, you're not interested in going, though.
You know, I thought I was, but it turns out I'm not. Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I mean, I'm seriously a little, I don't know. I tried to watch Man of Steel earlier this week to get mm-hmm. in the mood, mm-hmm. and I dozed off right after the Kryptonite sequence and woke up occasionally and just wasn't, just in the eventually was like, oh, I'm done.
I think this movie's better than Man of Steel. Well, what I liked about Man of Steel was the parental moments, father, son, having the conversation, what does it mean to be a hero, and then do you come out or do you stay hidden with your powers, with your skills, whatever they may be? And of course the fight, this ultimate decision of do I fight or do I not for these people that are going to take on my homeworld. I understand a lot of people don't like the Lois Lane stuff. That's fine. But there you go. But you also said that you were reading some comics and they're just not as, as good as they were.
Yep.
Maybe 25 years ago.
I got a hold of Dark Knight Returns. Mm-hmm. Thought this will be the great. I'll get myself. Totally,
but you've read Dark Knight Returns before, right?
I've not. No.
Oh, really?
I've not. Yeah.
Okay.
So this was going to be my big. Like, yeah, I'm fine. As I've never been a big DC guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a Marvel guy, and mm-hmm. that has its own baggage. So
right.
That's a thing. But boy, that comic was not. I've spent. You know, I told you. Rat Queens,
right.
Volume 1 of Rat Queens, I tore through in 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I tore through Volume 2 in about 45 minutes. And for the last week and a half, I've been trying to read Dark Knight Returns, and I just don't care. It's dreadful.
There are a couple of things that I think that...
Well, the book's not dreadful. I mean, my lack of caring is...
Right, right. There are a few things that I think go into that. First of all, that book came out in the 80s in the middle of Reaganomics. And this book is dripping with the politics of the time.
Yeah, it is super topical, which I did not realize. I thought I was going to be popping open a great classic,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I was going to get to see some iconic fights and a iconic vision of Batman. And it turns out, yeah, it's really 80s. And,
yeah.
It's really 80s.
It really is. Yeah. I mean, yeah. From top down, it's very much that way. And, you know, I would say if you're going to go see Batman v Superman, certainly having a little bit of knowledge about this book is useful, but there are only like three sequences in the movie that I thought were lifted directly out of the book.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm one of those guys who I'll try to kind of get ready for this thing by mm-hmm. sort of getting in the mindset mm-hmm. of that media form and,
right.
And, which is stupid, you know. So, yeah, I wasn't like, oh, I need to know this to watch the movie. It's just, this is going to get me excited for the movie, because I wasn't excited for the movie. And I'm still not excited for the movie. And it's really mm-hmm. weird to me. You mm-hmm. know,
The other thing about Dark Knight Returns, though, I think, in addition to being locked into that time period, is this really is one of the first books that turned the hero into a grim and gritty, dark antithesis of what people had come to expect.
Yeah.
But by that standards, it was pretty shocking. By today's standards, where, you know, you're reading a book like The Boys and someone's getting their head punched off every third panel, that's not shocking anymore. So you go back and read it. It's kind of like you've seen The Christmas Carol. You've seen Scrooged. You've seen all of these television and movie adaptations of A Christmas Carol. And then when you go back and read the source material, you're like, what the F is this stuff?
Yeah,
this is
yeah.
boring.
This is very 19th century.
Yeah, yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, this is... Yeah. So maybe I just picked some bad material to get myself in the mood for, but I asked my sons the other day, mm-hmm. you guys want to go see, cause I thought last night maybe we'd catch that 6 o'clock show if they cared enough.
Yeah.
No, they didn't. No, don't, we don't need to go.
It was pretty crowded in our theater, although there were open seats.
Mm-hmm.
I took Mason. He's 8. He wanted to go cause he had seen Man of Steel and because it's a superhero movie and he knows I'll automatically thumbs up that providing that it's not Deadpool rated R.
Right.
And so he was excited about seeing it. He really liked it. But as we were leaving the theater, a family in front of us, the husband was wearing a Superman shirt, two kids that were probably about the same age as my son, and the mom were all walking out and she was basically like, this is the worst movie I've ever seen. This is the worst Batman movie I've ever seen. This is the worst Superman movie I've ever seen.
There's been some bad Batman movies.
I know. There have, right? Yeah. So I thought that was...
And Richard Pryor was in a bad Superman movie.
I know, right? So I can see how people are looking at this from both sides, and some people are really, really going to love it, and some people are really, really going to hate it. But in answer to your question, Jess, Ben Affleck does a superb job as Batman in this movie. You may not like how Batman is portrayed, but Ben Affleck pulls off a very, very good Batman in this movie.
That's good.
That's all I'll say on that. Well, that's too bad that you don't want to go see that, but yeah. I liked it. And it's already, they said, $180 million opening weekend here in the U.S., which is about $30 million higher than what they anticipated for the U.S. Worldwide, they still think they're going to hit $300, $350 million. So it's on track to do just fine.
Yeah.
So.
Well, so far we've done a great job of not talking about Dawn of Justice.
Well, we haven't spoiled anything.
Oh, that's
so
true. Okay.
And we were talking about source material, not
that's right.
the other stuff. So there you go. I have some other theories, but if you want some really crazy theories and one that really shook a couple of you up when I kind of tweeted it out the other day, go listen to this week's Zach on Film if you have seen the movie, because I reveal some things that some people were like, wow, I never thought of that before. And now that you've brought that up, totally makes sense as a meta commentary of what the film is trying to do. So,
Wow. Yeah.
The other, a couple of other things happened this week. I don't have a regular news segment this week. And I know, Brad, you're always excited about the regular news segments.
I do like the news.
But there was a story that I ran last week and a half ago, I think, about this Lovecraft letter manuscript that was found.
Maybe Lovecraft wrote that.
Well, you don't think it is Lovecraft, though, right?
It's probably really not. I mean, the more I hear, I mean, I haven't looked at it, of course, but
right.
the more I hear about it, it's probably not even,
So what was going on with this is that Lovecraft at one time had been commissioned by Harry Houdini to write a manuscript about basically debunking the paranormal.
Yeah.
And apparently Houdini and Lovecraft had worked together a couple of times. Is that true or not true?
Well, there was Lovecraft wrote a story or parts of a story that went out under Houdini's name.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Imprisoned with the Pharaohs, which is a pretty cool little story. Actually.
Imprisoned with the Pharaohs.
Yeah.
But that's a, isn't that in the general Lovecraft collection? As everyone knows that as a Lovecraft tale, and it's not
canonically Lovecraft.
Okay. But it's not listing Harry Houdini as the writer of that. I mean, right.
Like, yeah. If you buy an anthology of Lovecraft stories, it might say with Harry Houdini or something like that. But I think when it was originally published, it was published under Houdini's name.
Is that the only time that they collaborated?
Yeah. And it might even be a stretch to call that a collaboration, but as far as I know, I had not heard of this book until this chapter came up, and then I was reading about it, and oh yeah, apparently everybody knew about this forever, but it was,
yeah. And that's the other thing, is it's this lost manuscript that apparently Houdini and another writer had been working on, or Lovecraft had been working on with another writer for Houdini, and it had disappeared after Houdini's death, or it had been put away in the wife's collection, Bess's collection.
I mean, there was never really a manuscript. I mean, I think Lovecraft wrote an outline for a book, and then of course Houdini died, and I think nobody cared. That's the
right,
thing.
Right.
It's like, oh, okay, well, we're not doing that project.
Yeah,
and you know, it's the sort of thing that if Lovecraft had half an interest in it, he wouldn't have let Harry Houdini dying stop him from completing the project.
Right.
You know, I mean, that wouldn't be.
And so that's why a lot of people are like, and including the leading scholar, what's his name? Toshi?
S.T. Joshi.
Joshi.
Yeah.
He says this isn't even Lovecraft at all.
Yeah, and I think he's probably right.
He said it may be the work of, who is it, M.E.M.? I'm trying to see here in the article real quick as I scan through here.
Yeah, I can't remember the guy's name either. But the other, so there were.
Oh, C.M. Eddy.
Yeah. So he was, or maybe that's even a she. I can't remember.
Oh, really? Okay.
I can't.
Even
remember.
More interesting.
Anyway, that person, male or female, was supposed to be writing this with Lovecraft, as a collaboration. But even that, I don't know how much of a collaboration Lovecraft would have had with it.
Right. So it looks like maybe he did the outline, and then C.M. Eddy was supposed to follow up with everything.
Yeah.
There was one chapter of this book published a long time ago in a 1961 collection.
Yeah.
About the paranormal. And that's about all that anyone knows this manuscript.
Yeah. And that's, I don't even think that was published. That was probably published under Eddie's name, I think.
Interesting. The interesting thing about this, though, is everyone thought it was lost. But after Bess died, or after these items were being sold off, some magician bought it and had it in his shop for years. And apparently everyone who was a Lovecraft or Houdini fan knew about this.
Yeah.
But it just never popped up until... It went on auction this week.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't, somebody will pay a ton of money for it, but.
You think?
Somebody will.
I guess that goes on auction next week. And I think that they are hoping for, opening bid starts at $13,000, but they're hoping that it'll go for $30,000.
Yeah. Well, that's a ton more than I would have thought it would go for.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because it's not even, I don't know what the provenance is for it for real, but, but from what I know about it, I mean, when we say we're not really sure that it's Lovecraft who wrote these pages, I mean, really what you're guaranteed there is these are some pages written by somebody, that was once part of a project that H.P. Lovecraft wasn't very interested in. That's what you've got,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so, you know, if Lovecraft is your thing, you know, I mean, there are a lot of pages that are attached to a project that Lovecraft wasn't interested in.
I guess the last time something that really had H.P. Lovecraft's essay on astrology sold to a collector in Utah for $5,000. So I guess there's some people that are digging on that.
Yeah.
How much of a, you know, you did your thesis.
My dissertation.
I'm sorry, your dissertation. That's why you're Dr. Bradley, Will. You did your dissertation on Lovecraft.
Partly on Lovecraft, yeah.
So did you have to go way deep? I mean, how would you say you compare to Joshi?
I read a lot of stuff that ST wrote. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, he's the man. So, mm-hmm. I mean, he's the man. And so that's, yeah. So he wrote, you know, the definitive biography, and he collected the letters, and he compiled the definitive editions of all of Lovecraft's work. And
just because somebody has done that, does that mean that they are absolute correct? Because there's a lot of debate. There was this is a quote from Lincoln about his belief on religion and where he stands on religion that was floating around about a month or so ago during one of the primaries. And I said, okay, so people are saying this isn't actually a Lincoln quote. So I went and looked it up, and you go, and I found this one book done by the guy who wrote Lincoln's biography after his death. And he says that while, you know, basically it's not a word for word quote, but basically that is what he said in a generalist form. It's not like people are taking anything out of context. And yet people are like, well, this guy doesn't know anything, even though he is the one that went around and interviewed all these people after or survivors who knew Lincoln after his assassination and had compiled letters and had collected these kinds of things. People are still like, well, even though this guy wrote the definitive biography on Lincoln, he still doesn't know what he's talking about. Does that happen a lot when we talk about?
I mean, I'm trying to think of a major Lovecraft publication that wasn't somehow vetted by or filtered through or edited by Joshi.
And I'm not trying to put him down. I'm just asking.
When
does somebody become the only source of information?
So in the 80s, you know, Lovecraft was not sort of a valid, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Some hack writer somewhere, and there was no academic attention being paid to him.
Right.
And Joshi was really among, you know, the leading group that was like, oh, there's something really going on here. And then, you know, he's devoted his entire academic career, I guess, to the weird fiction and 95% of it probably to Lovecraft. And I don't know. I mean, he's the man. I don't, if S.T. Joshi says something, I am inclined to believe it.
Okay.
Just maybe I'm easy that way.
No.
But you know, like if you were to say to me, Brad, I want you to check this fact. Okay. Every reference I would use to check that fact is either edited by or written by S.T. Joshi.
Okay.
So that's, you know, because that's.
No. So he's the man. So if he says it's not Lovecraft, it's not Lovecraft.
Yeah. And maybe even by pure edict. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's almost like the baseball umpire who, by calling that ball a strike, makes it a strike.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's almost, maybe it's at that level at this point.
No. I mean, I find that very fascinating because then the next thing that comes up that people start thinking about is the Necronomicon, right? Because Lovecraft in, what was it, The Tomb or something like that.
I can't remember where it first appears.
It appears just somewhere. As a fact check where the character in the story is, ooh, where does this come from? Check the Necronomicon. And that's like the first time that it appears in print, at least in Lovecraft's world.
Yeah.
And then as Lovecraft starts collaborating with other writers and giving them basically permission to use this world that he has created, they start to build up this world. And the story of the Necronomicon by the mad Arab, what's his name?
Abdul al-Hazrad.
There you go. Yeah. Starts to become more and more fleshed out to the point where, what, by the mid-1980s, a Necronomicon appears on bookshelves.
Yeah.
Edited by Simon.
Yeah.
What's going on with this? What is going on with the Necronomicon?
Well, now, listen, I haven't done my Necronomicon homework in a while. So,
okay, that's fine. Yeah, you can give me a general story. So, I'm not looking for absolutes here.
There's that edition that really, when you look at it, is really just sort of a cut and paste of a bunch of different pages. I've never even owned that. Although if I could find a copy of it, I would buy it just for, you know.
Oh, yeah, and you're not going to find it here in Hayes.
Yeah. But it's mostly just gibberish. I mean, just
literal gibberish.
Well, there is. I mean, I think that's the edition you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That is, and then you know, if you look at it carefully, you can see where this bit of gibberish appears 30 times in the text.
Okay.
You know, it's not original gibberish. It's just cut and paste pastiche of some gibberish.
Okay,
enough to generate something that looks like a book. But the name Necronomicon has been used over and over again. I think H.R. Geiger did a collection mm-hmm. called the Necronomicon, mm-hmm. and it's just it's a cool idea.
But it's interesting though that, and this is the weird thing about this world building that has happened. I guess you could say it's open source world building of Lovecraft stuff,
shared world
stuff, where suddenly people have talked about and written about the Necronomicon so much that it's essentially been birthed, right? Just like Josie or Joshi, if he says it, it's true. Suddenly this idea of the Necronomicon has become so popular that suddenly, poof, there's a book that appears on bookshelves called the Necronomicon.
It's a little less magical and more cash grabby than that, probably, right?
Well, that's what I think it is, just this sheer will of, everybody thinks the Necronomicon is real. It's not real, or is it? And then suddenly, let's try to make a cash grab on it by this guy goes by the name Simon. And you could go back into the story of this thing where someone walked into his magic shop one day with this manuscript that looked like it was 500 years old.
Yeah.
With all this stuff on there, and he decides with this other guy to partner up under the name Simon and publish this stuff.
Yeah. So, okay, so part of it is, and this is, I'm a university professor, and the people I talk to, my students, are mm-hmm. typically in their 20s, and I've got kids who are teenagers, and there's an interesting sort of cultural thing that, given your age, certain people are aware of, certain people are not aware of. For example, Cthulhu was not always a touchstone of our culture.
Right.
You know, I mean,
Lovecraft writes him.
Yeah.
It goes into a trashy, weird science magazine.
Yeah.
It disappears for 70 years.
Mostly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's really until the 80s when people start coming back to this. Guys like Sandy Peterson make the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game,
mm-hmm.
Nerdy culture, which was not nerd culture today. Nerd culture back then was real nerds. We were nerdy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a pretty esoteric crowd. The esoteric crowd knew about Cthulhu and they knew about Lovecraft,
mm-hmm.
but this stuff didn't permeate popular culture. I mean, and it seemed like it would never, I mean, it seemed like it was exactly the opposite of what could ever be popular culture. So take yourself back to a time when only a handful of really weird people knew what the name Cthulhu was.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, my high school.
Yeah, right. Maybe at my high school, maybe literally nobody in my high school class knew about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And some guys I started to hang out with at a different high school knew, but nobody in their high school also. Like, I mean, it's really small
number
of people.
Really dig down deep to find this stuff.
Yeah, there was never a Cthulhu plushie or a Cthulhu bank or a Cthulhu t-shirt
or anything like that.
Nothing like that. Yeah. So take yourself back to that time and imagine that some people have maybe vaguely heard the name Necronomicon float around before, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Necronomicon appears in Evil Dead.
Right.
Right. And so there, the Necronomicon is a thing. And then it'll pop up occasionally, but even Evil Dead wasn't pop. I mean, that was nerd culture. That mm-hmm. was not a popular movie
right,
at the time.
Right, exactly.
That was a total cult movie. So you could have a title like the Necronomicon that would float around, not in popular culture, but in this weird esoteric culture. And if you knew that it had appeared in some H.P. Lovecraft stories, and you had heard it mentioned in this movie once, and then you see it on the bookshelf,
mm-hmm.
See, now if you were to publish something that looked like the Necronomicon on a bookshelf, anybody, even vaguely sophisticated, would pick that up and they would go, oh, this is referencing that thing that H.P. Lovecraft made up, because that's where all of our heads are at now.
Right, right.
In the 80s, though, they would go, that name seems vaguely ominous and maybe familiar from something that I can't quite place, and maybe this really is a magical thing because nobody knows, and there mm-hmm. is no Wikipedia to look up the word
right,
Necronomicon.
Right.
So you know, there's that. I mean, that's the part that's the part of the information here that maybe would seem crazy to somebody born after 1990 who can't quite imagine that people don't know, you know, what Lovecraft is or mm-hmm. what Cthulhu mm-hmm. is or what the Necronomicon is. But at a time, you know, yeah, there was a time when, like in, from the 70s. So the Illuminatus trilogy.
Right.
Which is a
I love that book.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah.
Awesome book. Everybody should read that book.
I'm sure many of our listeners have. I know.
Some
have gone to great depths to go in and read that and critique it and talk about it. So,
in that book, Wilson and Shay, the cats.
Mojo, get out of here. He knows he's not supposed to be in here.
I'm sorry, Mojo. All right. Anyway, in that book, they are suggesting that, you know, Lovecraft was not writing fiction, but documenting some experiences.
Right.
I mean, of course, now that's its own piece of fiction. But, you know, the Necronomicon is referenced there. And so there are all mm-hmm. these little places where people may have heard of this stuff, and it kind of echoes as a sort of intertextual reference, but not the way an intertextual reference works today in 2016. Like,
mm-hmm.
like an intertextual reference was kind of vague and cloudy, and maybe that meant something.
Mm-hmm.
Today, for example, I was talking to my class about Canticle for Leibowitz.
Right.
And there's a scene in there where at the end of the book, some people are blasting off in a spaceship, and there's a monk right. who's getting the spaceship, and he takes off his sandals and he claps them together and shakes the dust off of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an intertextual relationship or reference. One of my students explained, it was totally lost to me, from the Book of Matthew, which is about shake the dust of this place off your feet.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and so it was really cool. I was like, man, it was really neat that this mm-hmm. student explained this to everybody. And then we all got something that we wouldn't have otherwise got, because it's that kind of like, oh, this maybe means something to you if you kind of are in the know. But intertextual stuff now is like, if I go see Dawn of Justice,
mm-hmm.
probably the next day I'll go on YouTube and look at the top 10 Easter eggs from Dawn of Justice,
right,
where someone will explain to me all the intertextual stuff.
Right.
And there's no kind of weird, it doesn't feel like you're putting together a tenuous web of interconnectivity.
Because it's all there all the time.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm getting at, I mean, it's a really long way of saying, yeah, that seems really stupid that somebody would publish a book called The Necronomicon and anybody in the world would buy it as anything other than a joke, except that our brains worked really differently then. You know, I mean, that's really it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like people, mm-hmm. like names like that function differently in our culture than they do now.
Mm-hmm.
And so a person might, pick that up and go, oh, maybe this is really something, right?
But today, bunk. Although Jess is saying here in the chat that she read it back in 1999, 2000. Not that it's required reading or anything, but still people are picking up and reading. And from what it looked like in the chat, and somebody correct me if I'm wrong, that some still believe in that as a true text, as the gibberish, okay, so, whatever it may be.
Well, I mean, and so there are multiple texts. And so I'm not sure when you're talking about the one by Simon, like literally,
I don't know, Jess, you would have to say who's the writer of that.
So there are versions, there are Necronomicons that are actually legible. The one I'm thinking of is literally not.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these aren't letters.
Right, and that's from the scribbles. Version, I guess the version that I'm talking about is, from the reading that I had done, it was indecipherable text. They couldn't tell what it was.
Yeah.
They just knew that the paper was over 500 years old. So, therefore, it predated Lovecraft, and therefore, it must be real.
Yeah.
According to their story.
Yeah.
And therefore, let's make some money.
Bunk. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, and Lovecraft never. Okay. So even the name Abdul al-Hazrad is, that's a joke name. It's a joke name. Mm-hmm. Lovecraft's mother's maiden name is Hazard.
Mm-hmm.
Hazard. And so he's identifying that, and he used that name at some point. That is, he's identifying that he wrote this himself. He's putting a version of his own name on there.
Mm-hmm.
There's no hoax being perpetrated by Lovecraft, right? I mean, this is all just a big fun lark. Right? That's all any of this stuff ever was.
And he was, and this is the weird thing too about Lovecraft is, and this is why going back to the story at the beginning was that he didn't believe in the paranormal. He didn't believe in this weird outer spirituality stuff, which is why he was working with Houdini, or apparently working with Houdini. But at the same time, he was just coming up with this stuff because he needed the money.
Well, plus he was into, okay. So Lovecraft's fiction is not like, you won't find a ghost in mm-hmm. Lovecraft's fiction. Right.
Right.
And so the stuff Houdini is debunking, spiritualism, you know, is ghosts and spirits and seances mm-hmm. and stuff. Right. And Lovecraft not only doesn't believe in that, but he's also not interested in that to the point that his fiction is not about that. Right. It's about something completely different. It's about, in my dissertation, I use the word supra mundane, because, you know, because there's not really a good word for it. It's not supernatural.
Right.
It's not. I'm at a loss for words. So here's, I mean, but this is how, when I say Lovecraft probably wasn't really interested in this project, like Lovecraft wasn't really even interested, like debunking ghosts and stuff. Like Lovecraft's philosophy of the world was way past that. We mm-hmm. weren't about debunking ghosts. Mm-hmm. Right? Lovecraft was interested in the idea, and he knows this is fiction. He knows in The Color Out of Space that he is fictionally imagining the notion of a color that is outside the spectrum of color.
Right. Right?
But conceptually, that's really, really cool to Lovecraft. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really cool to a lot of people now at the beginning of the 21st century. Like, I think there's a big segment of the 20th century where people were like, a color that isn't really a color, that doesn't make any sense. We can't, there's nothing to wrap our heads around.
Right.
And I think Lovecraft always described himself as an antiquarian, a guy out of time. He mm-hmm. should have been, he was more of a 17th century, 18th century kind of guy,
right.
He thought. I think he was probably more of a 21st century kind of guy.
You think, because I was listening to a podcast today, they were talking about Lovecraft's biography, and they say, like, The Tomb, for example, I just think was his first work, earliest work, where he basically creates this character who is essentially going back by being in this tomb, connecting with the 1700s, and they were saying Lovecraft felt like he should have belonged in the 1700s or would have fit right in with the 1700s. But I'm wondering if he popped up today, if Lovecraft would have been going, holy crap, imagine all this stuff that I can be doing with this stuff now. And I'm very comfortable living here on the internet.
Yeah. Well, or I mean, the more,
at least he'd have a place to share his racism in a much wider.
he would have some cool Twitter bots to chat with about anti-Semitism. Yeah, that would be its own thing.
Yeah.
No, okay, so but imagine a less outrageous hypothetical thing, right? What if you took all of Lovecraft's texts and you sent them back in time to the 17th century?
Mm-hmm.
Would people read them and go, "Oh, this is awesome. This is really connecting with our brains. This is really cool." Probably not.
No,
right?
They'd probably string him up as
And even if you threw them into the world in the 1920s, some people would go, "Oh, this is really interesting. This is really mm-hmm. cool." But he probably wouldn't grab a hold of the culture. And in fact, it's not until the turn of the century, until the turn of the millennium, that the world seems to be ready for Lovecraft's ideas. And now we just eat this stuff up, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Right? You can't get away from Lovecraft.
Right.
And I mean, that's why I say, I think he was a 21st century guy, because all of a sudden the 21st century is in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll forgive his crazy racism and you know, we will look away from all of this really outrageous and occasionally writing,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the idea is here, the idea that not that Yog-Sothoth is some kind of, you know, mystical supernatural being, but that it is some kind of weird force of nature that we just can't quite grasp yet because of the limitations of our epistemological ability.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a thing now, right?
So, yeah. But let's say that Lovecraft had not appeared in the 1920s and not been re-found in the 70s and 80s.
Okay.
If he suddenly showed up today, would this be really completely out of space? Do you think, would all this be new to the point where people are like, I don't buy any of this stuff? Because we didn't have him to be here to create this shared world and those kinds of things. Or do you think people would just be like, wow, this is totally new, sparkly vampire stuff, man. Let's buy this stuff.
I think the other brilliant notion that Lovecraft had, and it was the brilliant notion that George Lucas had, was I'll invite other people to play in my sandbox, and they will make my sandbox a very rich and wonderful and deep, magical place to be. So, you know, a lot of other writers, I mean, so you can, you know, you can hear echoes of these words that come and go and come and go and come and go. And so, so stuff begins eventually to reverberate through culture and picks up more and more and more. And so, yeah, you're right. Like without, I think also if Lovecraft had not, you know, if he had not corresponded with these people and if he had not created the Lovecraft Circle and various things had not happened, we wouldn't have Lovecraft today. He wouldn't be, I don't know, maybe. I mean, maybe somebody would go back and find that and go, wow.
I mean, we look
totally
at like Steven Spielberg, Stephen King takes, you know, so much of the Cthulhu mythos and tries to incorporate in different parts of his stories to where you feel that even though it's not, you know, King is not writing about Lovecraft, but he's talking about this creepiness factor that comes out of.
Take Pennywise the Clown from It, right? Which really may be just some kind of a alien like that. It maybe is a horror story and it may be supernatural, but it really ultimately the more you dig into it, it's really like science fiction.
Right.
Which is an important distinction to make, right? Mm-hmm. And it's science fiction in exactly the sort of way that Lovecraft is writing science fiction.
Right.
Instead of supernatural.
Yeah. So then where do the collaborators come from? Because, you know, Lovecraft throws out these names of these gods. But then over time, we've got people like Sandy Peterson, who what is his role in this world of mythos and world building besides just creating some cool games?
Well, just create some cool games.
Did he not also collect, you know, like kind of, I don't want to say the definitive collection of the Lovecraftian gods, but didn't he add a lot to that?
It's all really so complicated, right? Because really nothing.
I'm not putting
happens.
You on the spot. I'm just very interested in this.
Well, right? I should have read a book or something before I came here. So it really goes back to August Derleth, who collects Lovecraft's work and sort of maybe hijacks his position as Lovecraft's sort of managing Lovecraft's literary estate, and then collaborates and changes some things. And so August Derleth brings in some elements that maybe weren't part of the Lovecraft's vision of the world, sort of a good versus evil kind of element there wasn't really part of this. And he maybe puts together some business of the Lovecraftian pantheon. And so when Sandy Peterson created Call of Cthulhu game, I mean, that was the first place where you'd have sort of a Lovecraft bestiary.
Oh, right, because you have to have that in order to play the game, right?
Yeah, and so maybe, I mean, in that sense, maybe. But then you've also got to realize that we can talk about Lovecraft, but if you want to talk about stuff that we now take, and thanks to Sandy and Call of Cthulhu, you know, we think of Haster and the King in Yellow as being part of the Cthulhu mythos.
Right.
But that was actually
not
from Robert W. Chambers, who published in the late 19th century, but Lovecraft didn't read until near the very end of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And when he did, he was like, oh, this guy is awesome.
But had that person was dead though, by the time Lovecraft had read it, because wasn't that written like in
1895?
Yeah,
I think
something
was
like
when
that. Right.
King in Yellow anthology came out.
Right.
But Chambers takes Haster and Carcosa and all that stuff, like everything except for the phrase King in Yellow that appears in True Detective, Haster and Carcosa and all that business, Chambers lifted from Ambrose Bierce, who was writing 20 years before or 30 years before Chambers was. Like, You know, so it's like when I say it's really complicated, like it's really complicated. And so this stuff, you know, echoes back and back and back.
I'm just really surprised. I mean, you know, copyright law meant something in the 1920s, not like it does today, where, you know, copyright was literally you have the rights to exploit this for your endeavors, for your life plus, you know, 25 years or whatever it was. And at which point the idea was, and this is what the founding fathers had set up whenever they set up the copyright laws, was that, yes, we want you to create. We want you to make money off of it, and then we want you to be able to give it to the greater good, to give it to the people.
Right, right.
I'm not sure copyright laws would have expired by the time Lovecraft starts using the King in Yellow. And what's this feeling of doing this at the time? I know between Lovecraft circles, he was like, "Yeah, fine, go ahead, do whatever you want with it."
I'm not sure that Lovecraft ever used the King in Yellow. Maybe he does,
or Haster, or whoever. Haster, but I mean, Haster. You know, borrowing these characters from other sources that were passed.
Well, so yeah, Ambrose Bierce was dead plenty long enough probably.
So maybe copy, maybe yeah, it was public domain by then.
Yeah. But, and then Lovecraft was very conscious about putting his, not the texts themselves, but his ideas into the public domain. I mean, he did in writing, invite people to specific people, but then more generally, invite people to use his character. I mean, he would say, you know, okay, go ahead and reference this character, use this character. I mean, so so he was very conscious about opening his world up and making it so that there was no question of people violating copyright. I mean, I don't know if he talked about it in those terms, but he was very conscious about inviting collaboration with people. You know, I lost the question.
No, I was just, I
are
mean,
there any viewers
just,
still? Are we,
oh no, there's a lot of people. This is the cool thing about today. And next time you come in, I will have a monitor set up so that you can read the comments, because the chat room, you guys are doing great today. This is the YouTube chat, not the chat at Alpha Geek Radio. But you guys are really tearing it up. Jess did say, she did get back with me and say that, yes, the Simon book, it was the Simon Necronomicon that she had read. The others are debating back and forth about misogyny and racism in authors' works or at the time period and those kinds of things. So you guys have been doing a bang-up side job. So for those of you that are watching this after, look down below as you're listening to what we're talking about and see how great the comments are today. So you guys are doing fan-frickin-tastic.
Awesome. Yeah, I can't see the comments.
Yeah, I will have that. I will have that next time. One other thing, Brad, I don't know if you've been following the Kickstarter. My mouse is being stupid. I don't know if you've been following the Kickstarter for the Cthulhu Wars, the Onslaught 2 stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see a few days ago, I think it was Sandy, released an update where he had painted all of his gates?
Oh, that's not Sandy. No, that's just some dude.
Oh, that's some dude? Okay.
Yeah, and so and that's Where's just something that you lost your mouse.
I lost my mouse. Aw. That could be bad, but oh, there it is.
Okay.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay. Here it is.
Yeah, that was some guy had painted that stuff up and posted it to Board Game Geek. So yeah, he did a killer job on those gates.
Yeah, I'm showing these right now. This one is the Crawling Chaos, the desert theme one, which I really kind of dig that one because it's got some dried grass that he put on there. Yeah. And then you've got the Cthulhu Gate, which has got the green and the slime and everything, which is also very cool. And then you've got the Sleeper Gate. Does this make you want to go back and...
I was painting gates this morning.
So, oh yeah? And how is that coming? Because you got a lot of gates out of this. I've got 22 gates.
So I've painted a grand total of two. And I've got five on the workbench right now.
I really like the Windwalker gate, the snow capped gate. Yeah, I thought it was really cool. And then the yellow sign one, since we were talking about Haster and King in Yellow.
Yeah.
A friend of his, I guess, had a bunch of Warhammer 40K pieces laying around and just littered that gate with
a lot of cool
skulls and body parts and all sorts of stuff. Yeah. That's scary.
Yeah. So I don't know. So right now I'm painting my gates up all to look exactly the same because I'm doing this kind of speed. Well, it's not speed because it's taking forever.
Oh, sure.
But I don't have time for this.
Right.
So I'm just like slapping some gray on there and slapping a little white on the skulls and painting them up and getting them out. And that's my goal at this point, to just get these things.
Well, I've got mine have come in, not my plastic gates.
Yeah.
But my stuff has arrived, and I need to get mine painted, so I'm going to have you show me how to paint miniatures because I've never painted miniatures before.
Yeah.
I've never played D&D before Critical Hit, never painted miniatures until I need to now. So
we'll get you going.
All right. Let's go to the phone lines, 785-727-1939, if you want to call in on the phone line, or Skype at Steven_Schleicher. Hello, who is this?
Cthulhu 2016.
My sweatshirt is coming in the mail next week, I believe.
Yeah, I got to order. I've got to
order.
I think
it may be over. Yeah.
No, it's
is it still ongoing?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I thought it was a limited time you had to get your stuff.
No,
in.
Cthulhu for America is the to plug them. CthulhuForAmerica.com.
What's going on, Nate?
Nothing. Actually, going to be doing a little sparring tonight, but other than that, got to see Batman Superman last night with the boy,
good.
And actually. The best thing was the conversation on the way home about different things. So I
good.
Thought that was kind of neat.
I think that's the nice thing because my son and I had that same conversation. And I was like, you know, I like going to the movies with you and taking you to these kinds of things because it allows us to have a nice conversation afterwards to where we can talk about these kinds of things. And I think for those of you that have listened to the podcast, a couple of people had already commented that he seems very insightful about these kinds of things. He seems pretty savvy about his discussions on this kind of stuff. So that's a good thing when a movie can generate content between, you know, parent and child.
Yeah. I mean, most of it was like, why did that happen? And I was like, you know what? Yeah. Why would you do this? Mm-hmm. Why? And mm-hmm. So, like Ben Affleck, I had some issues with the movie, but all in all, I enjoyed it. I probably want to go see it again just because, you know, the first time around, that initial, like, you know, I might enjoy it a little more after the other viewings, but I enjoyed it. It was good.
Good.
What was I going to say? I don't know anymore. Cthulhu is eating my brain.
Cthulhu, yes. That's the other thing about Lovecraft stuff, or at least in the way that the characters were written, is the deeper down that rabbit hole you go about trying to find out more about these characters, both in the book and supposedly in real life, the crazier and crazier you get, because it's not that you're becoming wiser, it's that it's so incomprehensible that you go insane.
Yeah, you're learning what you do not know.
Yeah.
Which is my basic existence.
Well, I can't even hear Dr.
Oh, you can't hear him?
I can't hear him.
How about if I get in real close?
Is he whispering again?
No. It's here, let me do this. It's a good thing this is happening at the end of the show and not at the beginning of the show.
Oh, you probably left out. Nobody could hear me probably.
No, they could hear you during the show. Now talk.
How's that? Can you hear me, Nate?
Oh, lovely.
All right.
See?
There you go.
There you go.
So I can't remember what I was saying. It was gibberish.
Just about the insanity.
Yeah.
So, that's what I want to say. Did you see that there is a number 3 manual on sale pre-order right now on Amazon?
A number 3 manual.
What is that?
Or number 3 journal from Gravity Falls.
Oh, about Gravity Falls. No, I did not see that.
Oh. Yeah, it went pre-sale yesterday. I think like Amazon Prime members, it was like $14.
Yeah, it's a $12.30 hardcover with your Prime membership. So looking at that right now, Journal 3.
If you put it under black light, will you be able to?
Ooh.
I bet you will. That would be cool.
Is there a Journal 1 and 2 that I've missed out on?
I think so, because I don't, it's really weird because all of a sudden, like, it popped up 3 and I've been watching all this other, some other merchandise sites and stuff. And I think there was a 1 and 3 or 1 and 2 out there.
Oh, interesting.
And by the way, I still haven't made it to the end of Gravity Falls yet either. So,
well, it gets weird. Yeah. There's a couple of characters that could be out of Lovecraftian mythos. So
I know about Bill. But that's
Bill Cipher is really crazy.
Yeah,
I might have to see if I can grab this. So I'm guessing it's got like pages for journal stuff, in addition to the Gravity Falls stuff. Is that right? Because this is the wrong journal. What I have here, what I'm showing people on the video, is this Superman journal, and when you open it up, like the first dozen pages or so have like stuff that's supposed to literally be from Superman's journal and notes. And then in the back half, it's just space to write your stuff.
So it wouldn't be a whole.
Yeah. That's what I'm wondering if the Gravity Falls one is like that or not. But read my journals again.
But Volume 3, that's the volume that Dipper has throughout the series, right? He doesn't have,
I think that's the one they're looking for, right, Nate?
I thought
three. No, actually, I believe he's right. I think three was the original one that he found,
then
one and two ones that came about. When he tried to find the author and all that other stuff, and then of course I think Uncle Sam had one of them.
Right, right.
And the other one was definitely a tree.
Oh yeah, so you'll.
Or is that where they found the laptop? I can't remember anymore.
Cool.
I'll have to rewatch it all again.
Cool. Well, I may have to check this out. That looks pretty cool. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. And then the only other thing is I've been catching up on some comic books, and I don't know if anyone on the site or whatever has been reading The Ultimates, but it's really neat what they're doing. They're taking a whole bunch of teams, and instead of them going and fighting people,
mm-hmm.
they're kind of like, I don't say Law and Order SVU or something, but they go out and they're like trying to fix the wrongs in the universe right now.
Oh, cool. Neat.
So they actually went and figured out how Galactus became Galactus, and basically reset him to a life giver instead of the world destroyer.
Interesting.
So he actually is now running around the universe,
worlds instead of
giving life back to planets and stuff.
Now that's interesting. Huh. I may have to check that out. That's the current run of the Ultimates.
Yeah, I think there's issue 6 now or whatever. It's a quick read. It's good. And then they have different people and they're like, it's really interesting because it's like they're the team and they're going out and taking everything. And I think, Black Panther is kind of like their leader.
Oh, okay.
Or no, maybe it's not Black Panther. It's, he's part of it though. The neat thing is now they're actually going to the negative zone and trying to go beyond the negative zone to fix the whole timeline thing that was that happened.
Interesting.
With, you know, Earth 616 and the Ultimate Universe collapsing and stuff. They're trying to go and verify what's going on and try to fix that or redo some of that stuff. It's pretty cool.
Maybe for people that need some clarification or some resolution with Secret Wars. Well, sounds like Ultimates is the place to go.
That would be good. You know, so about issue 7 of Secret Wars.
Uh-huh. That 7 was, of 22.
Yeah, 7 of 7, 7 of 8, 7 of 9. That was literally about where I stopped buying Marvel Comics.
Oh, really?
Like, I was just kind of like, this is not... And I told you I'd read that whole Avengers arc, that whole thing, Avengers Infinity, and all in one fell swoop because I was going to get the big grand picture of this beautiful, awesome story that was being told. And then I realized they're just making this crap up as they go. And it just ticked me off so bad. And I was just, I've been done. I haven't even reading Spider-Man.
Oh, that's too bad. The new Daredevil series I like.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. I like it. Check it out. All right, Nate, anything else?
The Spider-Man 2099 is pretty neat. That's pretty good too.
Cool. All right.
But that's it.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for calling.
Have a good weekend. And, again, remember, write in ballot Cthulhu 2016.
There you go. May have to do that. Thank you, Nate. 785-727-1939. That's the Major Spoilers hotline. Or you can call Steven_Schleicher on Skype if you want to get in on here. We've got a few minutes left, probably about 5 minutes left, so there's about time for one more call. But again, you guys have done a bang-up job talking back and forth based on our discussion, which is ultimately what we want on this show, is to generate discussion. And I think you guys have done that. I wonder if I shouldn't just create a different chat for everyone to try to get into, or if I should use the Alpha Geek Radio IRC room or what. So maybe you guys can share your thoughts on that.
Yeah. You know, so sometimes, you know, because I'm in the chat usually when I'm not here, which is most all the time, but also I'm at work at the time too. And I'm very much only tangentially paying attention, you know?
Oh, right. Right. You're just listening in the background.
Yeah. And so occasionally I'll end up watching Finally Friday as just on the YouTube later the next day or later in the week. And I really do miss that you can't see the chat there. You know what I'm saying?
You can see it in the YouTube. It scrolls below.
Oh, that's right. You can't see it there. Never mind. Well, then what are you worried about? Fine. Don't open a new one, because if you can see it there, then keep it there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you can't. Yeah, it scrolls below, but it's not the same.
No, it's not quite the same.
It's not the same as having, I like having it on the panel on the side, and I can do it. So,
Fabian, what is new with you?
Hi, Stephen. Do you have a nice weekend yet?
Not yet, because my accountant called today and says, things are all messed up. We need a whole bunch of new stuff from you. So I will be scrambling this weekend to redo my entire taxes to give to my accountant to show where the expenses are, where the income's coming from. So it's a big mess right now. So yeah, no, my weekend is not planned to be good at all.
Although I just had my 30th birthday,
happy birthday.
I never had to make taxes. It's not mandatory, I think. But if you start with it, you have to do it every year. So I have not yet started.
Wait a minute.
What, do you live in Saudi Arabia or someplace? How does that work?
No, it's Germany. We pay taxes with all the other stuff, and I'd have to declare stuff to get something back, I think. But you don't have to declare.
You don't have to file if you don't want to. Okay, it's only if you want something back. I could get behind that.
Yeah.
I could get behind. I also could get just behind a flat tax, but good luck getting that through anybody's agenda in the next 20
years. I'm just a big, big lazy boy. It's crazy how much paperwork I would have to do.
Oh, I'm sure. I am totally sure that it would be insanity to try to. Taxes are no fun. I don't like taxes. And that's why I hire someone else to do it. But then when apparently I don't give her the information she needs, then I have to scramble and try to get things done before.
Yeah.
I just don't want somebody crawling up my butt trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
I hear that's what the IRS does.
There's some stuff I need to make sure to finish until the end of the month.
Okay.
I want to cancel a credit card and get a new one because I don't want to pay the yearly amount for it. It's insane. I don't want a credit card that I have to pay for.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to give the one back and get a new one. I had a sweet deal, I think, where I had to pay like €1,000 a year over from the credit card.
Wow.
And it would be free. And I want that back.
Yeah, that's a good deal. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I think the credit card stuff in Europe is much different than
People can get in over their heads very quickly with credit cards here.
And so I got a better one for Nutecula last year.
Mm-hmm.
It was just that I was sure to pay there and to get stuff from the ATMs and stuff.
Right, right.
And I want to shift it again, and I want to move in the summer, so I have to cancel my flat. How do you say?
Your apartment, your lease.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd have to terminate that or whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So.
Well, you got a lot of things like coming up now that you're 30 and responsible.
Oh damn! Yeah.
Anything else?
I just wanted to say how much I loved the dice tower you printed.
Oh, thanks.
I saw the YouTube video, and mm-hmm. I don't have a 3D printer anywhere available in my immediate area, I think. So I was debating over building one from wood or something like that.
Yeah, you can printed, also buy kits.
Yeah, the one you printed looks really sweet.
Yeah, it's
especially
it's very nice.
The larger one.
Mm-hmm. That's the one I kept. Rob was here last night, and so I gave him the little one because I was like, we're not going to use this. It's really only good for one thing. He goes, I'll take it. And I was like, fine, you can take it. So there you go. But yeah, I like that. And I think this weekend, if I can free myself from these stupid taxes, I've got another 3D video to shoot that also ties into Dice and to Dice Masters and to other things. So you'll want to be on the lookout for that.
Cool stuff.
Yep.
So yeah. Thanks again, and I hope you have a great weekend. And I'm looking forward to Critical Hit tomorrow.
Excellent. Well, I am too, because I don't know what it's about yet. So, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
Great. Thank you.
Bye. And Brad, thank you again so much for
my pleasure.
For stopping in. It's always a great to have you here. And speaking of 3D printing, here's a little thing that I 3D printed a while ago. It's a little tentacle.
Nice.
It's for holding your phone.
Oh, that's
cool.
You
put your phone in there. So, Brad, thank you for coming
out. Oh, hey, thank you for the gift.
A little Cthulhu-esque tentacle.
If only we could have worked that so that we were handing across the frame. Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow,
here's my bigger one. This one's for an iPad. But
nifty.
Yeah.
Wow.
There you go. Your little 3D thing for that.
Put this by my bedside.
There you go. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you, Brad. People can follow Brad at Dr. Bradley Cooper, Dr. Bradley, not
Cooper.
Dr. Bradley Cooper. Wow. Dr. Bradley Will, sorry. Where Bradley Cooper came from. But Dr. Bradley Will on Twitter. You can follow me at Major Spoilers. It's been the end of that week, I tell you.
I tell you.
Thanks to all of our VIPs. Again, if you enjoyed this show and you want to see it continue or any of the other shows that we do at MajorSpoilers.com, be sure to visit members.MajorSpoilers.com. Sign up. There's some other cool things that we've been putting over there. I wrote an interesting article about the first female private detective. I want to write something about Lovecraft and the Necronomicon here shortly. So, again, plan for this weekend now dashed. But go over there because there's stuff that's only available to VIP members, and you can only get it by signing up at members.majorspoilers.com. Thanks so much, everybody. Have a great week, and we will see you next time when it's finally Friday.